Hi guys. I feel like every time we do this show, I'm always like scared it's not going to work and then we go live and I'm like, yay, but here we are, we're live. Our guests are here, we're live, it's all working. I basically feel like a technology genius every time I get this show to go live and work. So we're excited to be here. We have a good power hour for you guys today. I'm so excited for our guests today and for the conversation today. I was just telling them, I'm like hashtag like not a tech person. So I'm really excited to have two experts here because I'm going to pick your guys' brains and ask you guys all the things. So why don't you go ahead and introduce yourself, tell everybody who you are, what you do, if you have any free gift you want to direct people to or resources they can grab, go ahead and let them know about that. And then we'll just get started. We're going to chat about AI and we're in the future, all the robot things, all the things, time-saving hacks, all your guys' stuff.
Chandler, do you want to go first?
Absolutely. Hello, my name is Chandler. I'm the founder of Lethal Legal, a virtual intellectual property law firm. I'm so excited to be here and to talk to you guys today. I have a free resource. It's a 70-page guide. It's called The Lethal Guide to Legal Success, and it covers everything you could possibly need for your business to set you up for success. So that would be a great place to start.
That sounds amazing. Mm-hmm.
It's a good one.
So it's like all, is it all legal stuff or like what
all
is
legal.
It?
All yeah, legal. All things LLCs, I mean, business entities as a whole, different types, all things contracts, the types you need, when do you, I mean, it's very comprehensive. And then all things IP. So copyrights, trademarks, patents. It's a very, very comprehensive guide.
You guys should definitely go get that. Well, even the business structure, I feel like that's like a question I get all the time. It's like, should I have an LLC? Should I have, and I'm always like, I cannot advise you on this. Please talk to a lawyer and an accountant.
Yes. And like, what's a DBA? What does it do? How does it operate? How does this actually protect me? Yeah.
It's a lot to learn when you're starting a business too. And it's just all stuff. Like I know like a little bit about it now, but when I started, I didn't like, I was like, I didn't know really that much at all until my accountant was like, you need to be an S corp. Like you're paying way too much money in taxes. And I was like, good to know. Good to know.
Yes. See, that's how I feel about accounting and taxes. I'm like, nope, someone just handle all of that for me. I don't want to know. I don't want to have to know. I'll pay someone so I don't have to know.
Yeah, definitely law and accounting. I always feel like those things, like having experts that can kind of advise you on those things are super, super good when you're growing.
And my name is Manexia. I am the creator of Marketing Magic, which is an AI-powered business growth tool that is designed to save you 40 hours a month so you can get back to doing more of what you love in your business. And if you want to get a free 7-day trial, you can do that by going to marketingmagic.app/trial signup, I think it is. But if you go to marketingmagic.app, there will be a link for you.
say it slowly. Marketingmagic.app is your website, right?
Yes.
So, yep. And then /free trial.
But you guys should. But you can, there's a trial button on the main page. So you can just find your way to marketingmagic.app and go for it.
I have to tell you, and this was just serendipitous, like that this happened, but I got an email from somebody in my mastermind. She sent it to the team raving about your software. And she was just like, she sent it to my team and she's like, I don't know if Faith has seen this, but I got Marketing Magic and it is so good. And she's like, I don't even want to, like, she's like, I'm not trying to plug my affiliate. I'm just trying to make sure you guys know about it because it's amazing. And she was just raving about it. So I thought that was really cool. And I was like, oh, she's That's coming on the show this week. That's awesome.
Love that. So good. It's, there's such like a really like such a lovely community of people. Like it's my favorite thing that I've done because everyone who is in the community is just such a legend and everyone has such interesting businesses and everyone has been like so nice as well. So I've just had the best time over the last year with seeing how people are using it in their businesses.
Well, you really are positioned in such a unique place because I feel like as soon as like ChatGPT and all this stuff came out and you were like right there. You were like, here you go, everybody. Here's like what you need to be doing. Here's how to let me help you use it for your marketing, which is like just really cool to watch somebody do something so different in the space and like come up with something. I think it's rare. I've been on this space a long time. I think it's rare to see someone just do something totally new that like I have not seen before. And with your stuff you're doing, I feel like you're totally in your own lane, which is so awesome and exciting to see. And like I said, I've heard nothing but great things about you and about the software and everything. So thanks. I definitely want to pick your brain about AI stuff.
It's it's been a lesson in being less British, because the number of compliments that I have to just like have learned how to receive instead of just being self-deprecating. It's a real practice, but I do really appreciate that. So thank you so much. And I do also, like, full disclosure, feel like I had an unfair advantage, because AI really builds on the technologies that search engine optimization has been using for a while, which was how I started out in marketing. So I've kind of, you know, known about machine learning and how the technology was moving towards AI since around 2017, 2018, with the big Google algorithm update that happened when they implemented machine learning. And then obviously the generative AI stuff came onto the scene with ChatGPT, and really getting to grips with how it can be used just didn't feel like it was a difficult thing. So I've enjoyed it. And now I just enjoy being nerdy and building things that help people save time. So I also don't feel like it's a job. It just feels like I'm having fun on the internet. So,
oh my gosh, that's amazing. Yeah. That's so cool. Well, I want to ask you guys something I hear a lot. I'm sure you guys have heard it too, but it's like kind of like this alarmist stuff about AI, where it's like, you don't want to use it for copy, you don't want to use it for legal, or you don't use it for, there's a lot of people that are just like in the no camp. Yeah. And I'm curious what you guys think about that. Like, and how do you advise people to use it? Because the way I kind of think about it, you can tell me if you agree with this or you think it's off base or whatever. But I kind of feel like there's like proper ways to use every tool, right? So like, it's not like, you're never going to get a tool in business where it's like, oh, this is just perfect. And it does everything for you. And like, you don't have to do anything in your business. It's like, everything is just a tool, and you have to figure out with what you're doing in your business, what's the proper way to use that tool and how can you leverage it? And that's how I kind of think about it. What do you guys kind of think when you hear people talk about like I heard somebody say on a podcast, they were like, don't use ChatGPT to write any copy, and like, don't, like, you can't do that, and like, it'll kill your marketing. I'm sure you've heard that, right? I would love to hear your response to that. Mm-hmm. If that's okay.
Yeah, Chandler, do you want to?
Yeah. So I feel like the output is only ever going to be as good as the input, right? So you have to have good input for there to be a good output. When I think we all are at the point where it's like, unleash the magic and the power, and there's going to be like some rocket ship emoji and that star. But we all know what it looks like if people are just typing something kind of basic into ChatGPT. And
we always
having
joke
it
about
out.
The treasure trove. Have you guys heard that? So it's the unlock a treasure trove. And I'm like, I've skyrocket to you. Treasure trove. I'm like, who programmed this in there?
The tapestry of life. I've gotten that one. The tapestry of the intricate tapestry. I'm like, oh God. Yeah.
Unleash your skyrocket to the treasure trove.
Yes.
And it's just like,
yes.
Very like, I feel, remember when Tony Robbins was like everywhere and he was doing the like, unleash the power or whatever it was. That's what I think it like, well, cause I do a lot of kind of personal development mindset work. So a lot of my emails are about unleash the treasure trove. So that's a good tip. So it's only as good as like the input. What is the difference between a good input and a bad input? Like, what is a good input?
I have not mastered the good input, so I cannot give advice on that. But I can tell you, I follow so many people who do, and that's why I know it is possible. The one thing I will say is, just from the legal standpoint, right? I see people wanting to use ChatGPT for like legal answers, and that can be kind of difficult because situations are so nuanced. And so as an attorney, you can tell me your situation and I can't even give you an exact answer, right? Mm-hmm. It's for the most part always going to be, it depends, because it's going to depend on so many different factors and how all of those factors play out. And so we can't use ChatGPT or AI to give us a 100% solution to legal problems. The other thing I see that's common is people using or wanting to use ChatGPT to draft contracts.
Tell us your thoughts about that.
Yes. And that's where, I mean, I go back to what I said in the beginning, the output is only going to be as good as the input. And I'm sorry, but if you're not a legally trained professional, you're never going to have as good of input as you need to get the required output. Create a coaching agreement for me, create this for, I've done it. I've personally gone in as a lay person to see what it would auto populate. And I'm like, it's missing 5 million things. Mm-hmm. On top of that, all of these, again, it just depends on how you're running your business, how you're structuring your group coaching program, how you, it, you don't want there to just be a staple basic agreement or clause that you're getting when it's not how you want to run things. You want it to be customizable to your business. So again, I stand by, it's just the output is only ever going to be as good as the input. But for example, for things that are, I'm trained in legal, right? So I will, I'm not going to have as good of output for other areas. For example, marketing. That's why I still get Unleash or still get those things.
Mm-hmm. That's a really good point. I'd love to hear your thoughts too.
Yeah. So one of the things that I think we're seeing a lot more of, and I've been talking about this for the last like year or so more, because people can kind of see now how important context is, right? The internet advice for, especially in the online business space for 10, 15 years has been content, content, content. You need to create more content, be a thought leader, create content, grow your business. And like Gary Vaynerchuk is like, you know, if you're not posting on social media 8 times a day, you're not growing your business, and you should be posting, posting, posting. And what we're really seeing with things like ChatGPT and the fact that 180 million people started using it within the first 12 months is that people are overwhelmed by content. They don't want to go to Google and search for something and have to filter through 30 million search results. They want to be able to go into a tool like ChatGPT, ask it a question and receive a contextual response. And so the internet is moving towards context because people are overwhelmed. And so when we go to something like ChatGPT, just to, you know, build on what Chandler said, someone described it to me as garbage in, garbage out. And I really liked that. Mm-hmm. But it's that idea that if you don't have the contextual framework, then you are not going to get something that is relevant enough to your business for it to seem like it's been created by a human. And so that also feeds into a lot of the fear mongering that's happening, which is that when people are getting very generic content out of ChatGPT and they're putting it straight on their website, thinking they don't need to fact check it or check it for plagiarism or make sure that the information contained within it is, you know, real. And they're just putting it on there. Google's latest update that happened just last week is going to penalize websites and stops websites from ranking if it's got that kind of mass created content in it. One of the important things for me with Marketing Magic was that the results it generates passed the was it written by a human test when you put it into a checker. And the majority of results that are created by Marketing Magic, Google's, if you Google like AI plagiarism checker or any of those things, it will tell you that it was written by a human, even though it was created by AI. And that's because there's a, you know, really huge contextual framework behind the scenes, making sure that the AI is giving exactly what is necessary. And it really speaks to the need for human experts and this sense that business is moving towards the areas that you're interested in, the areas that you're passionate about, the areas that you're really great at, and probably the things that drove you to start a business in the first place. Those are the things that you want to be focusing more on, because they are the areas that you will be able to take AI into those spaces, create your own frameworks, right? You know, Chandler could create a legal AI framework with her expertise and knowledge and help business owners create, that contextual framework. It's like there are always going to be people who want to pay you like top dollar to work with you. Yeah. But there are also a whole load of people who aren't at that point yet in their business. And if we create tools that are only available or services that are only available to people once they're already successful, we end up with this scarcity mindset in these high ticket spaces and these spaces where we're doing more consultative work, because there isn't a pipeline of growing successful businesses to continue like working with us. So the conversations that people are having around the use of AI are like, it's going to replace humans. And it's only going to replace humans if you've got a very limited idea of what human is, because cognitive intelligence is not what makes a human. Your ability to automate the cognition element and automate a decision-making process is not what intelligence is. It's what intelligence is defined by Alan Turing and the sort of people that are the fathers of artificial intelligence. But as far as actual humanity is concerned, we have our emotional and relational intelligence. There is so much other stuff that goes into you being a successful human that goes far beyond your ability to process information quickly and get things done quickly and, you know, really do what AI does. So AI is just going to save us from doing all the data processing stuff that none of us enjoy anyway. And work is going to change, but it's going to hopefully change for the better if we are able to approach AI with the sense that it's a tool that humans can use, not a tool that should replace humans.
Yeah. I love what you said about like how much content there is. We were just talking about this in my mastermind on the coaching call on Tuesday. And I was saying, you know, when I started as a blogger, like way back, it seems like a long time ago now, like 8 years ago, you know, things were so different then. And I remember everybody always was like, give value, give value, give value. And that was like kind of what we've always been taught in marketing. And I was telling them like, we're in a place now where there's so much value and information, like just giving people information, like actually isn't valuable to people anymore because they have access to literally everything like in the click of a button. But I was like, so then what does value mean? And like something I've been thinking about for my launches and marketing in my business is like, I think the value we give is the community aspect and the networking aspect and the human connection. And we're actually pivoting our launch strategy. We're putting everybody on teams. Like, and that was one of the ideas I had when I was like thinking about if value is not information anymore and that information is just not valuable anymore, what can I provide that would be valuable, right? Yeah. And I think giving people opportunities to network, giving them accountability groups and support, giving them places to like bounce ideas and be around other entrepreneurs. I'm like, ChatGPT can't do that, right? Mm-hmm. And so that's just I was just looking at how do I provide value to my community if the climate is going to be changing and be completely different. And I think community building and relationship building and marketing is going to be like at the forefront in the next few years, but we'll see. I mean, I told the mastermind, I was like, this is just my guess, but like, that's the feeling I get as well. So I was like really happy to hear you say that. And I'll also say like the garbage in, garbage out, like your software is so brilliant about that because I haven't used it extensively, but when I did go in and do a trial and mess with it, it like, you have to make profiles and it asks you about your clients and it asks you about your brand and about your tone. And it like, I think, you know, your software helps people like put all of it in the context to pull out those answers that do sound human. Mm-hmm. And so I think that's really, really important. What would you guys say?
I was just going to say on the, you know, what is value piece, right? Is when I've referenced this a couple of times this week. So I'm going to mention it here as well, but the data information knowledge wisdom pyramid is a really cool framework to think
through. I've never heard AI. That.
So it's basically a pyramid and you've got in like data at the bottom and from data you get information and then from information you get knowledge and then from knowledge comes wisdom. So we are seeing like with AI, it's trained on data. So it takes data and turns it into information. If you ask it the right questions, you can get it to give you knowledge and you can kind of, you know, move from information to knowledge. But where it lacks the ability to be truly useful is it can't hop to wisdom because wisdom requires your experiences and it requires a much deeper understanding of the space and the, you know, ability to pull things together to take away, you know, fresh insights. So I think that's a really interesting one to look at as business owners, because we have so often thought, you know, knowledge is the answer. And actually, it's never been the case. Like the people who are, you know, big in the online business space are people who are able to give wisdom as well. And that's whole, you know, the whole concept of thought leadership kind of ties into that. But this idea that data is so accessible and it has been for like a long time, but data is overwhelming unless you've got all of these additional filters on. And so our value, the best value that we can bring as business owners, business leaders, is that we can shortcut how long it takes for people to get to context that means that they reach their goals and they have what they need in order to continue on their journey. And the thought leadership marketing angle is often this it's created a little bit of a culture of like, well, I am what I know. And I, if I, you know, if I just tease them with a bit of value for like just how wise and great I am, then they'll want to come into my, you know, business. They'll want to pay for my high ticket mastermind. They'll want to do this thing. It's like, no, no, people care about their own goals. We don't need to be overly focused on like knowing more than AI. We can just be focused on knowing the most about our ideal customers of anyone else in the space, and then providing them with the steps that they need to reach their goals. And I think that there's going to be a little bit of an identity crisis for some people when they start doing launches in the way they've been done for a number of years, and they haven't done what you've done, Faith, and taken that concept of like, okay, what is value now, and how do we change our strategy to make sure that we are showing what that value is outside of just, I know a whole lot more than you do, and you should come in here and do what I say.
It is nice when people think you're smart, but I don't think that's really what people care about. Like, I think they really care about like results.
Yeah.
You get results. And I think like being able to, the amount of information I think is super overwhelming to people, like no matter what industry you're in. And I coach a lot of people. I coach hundreds of, we have hundreds of people in my mastermind, and it, the amount of information just creates overwhelm. And when people get overwhelmed, they stop taking action. Mm-hmm. And so I think if we can like create systems that get them to like move and like take some kind of action and implement, even if it's small, I think that's huge for people, right? And I think the amount of information sometimes like keeps people even more stuck, when it's like, you can have anybody tell you anything about business. You can Google anything and get thousands of articles, and like a lot of, all of it is good and true. And like, then it's like, well, what do I do with that? Like, that really shuts people down. And so I do think there's going to be a need, like what you're saying, for leaders. I think leadership is going to look different, right? But leaders being able to like get people to implement, and also simplifying all of that information too. Because just because we have it doesn't mean that it's useful, right? What would you guys say for like people that are just starting? Because I have a lot of like new people that are like, have new business ideas and wanting to launch new online businesses. If they want to use AI in their business, like where do you even start, and like where can it be useful, and where would you think it might be like a hindrance to people?
So I'll talk about the hindrance side of things.
Yeah.
In the sense that when it comes to AI, and depending on what you're creating, because you don't have to own everything, obviously, but anything created by AI is not something that you can copyright. You cannot technically own anything that is AI generated. And it's going to be interesting to see. I mean, the law is slow as is. It's always going to be slow. And so it's going to be really interesting to see how the world of law and AI kind of collide in the future, and how it evolves over the next 5-10 years, and how things kind of transform. But as of right now, anything that is AI generated is not something that you can own or claim any rights to.
That's really important. So like, if I wanted to, let's say I wanted to write a book, which theoretically I always say I want to write a book, but then when I actually start trying to write a book, I'm like, maybe I hate this. Right. I don't want to write a book. Right. But let's say I do get my shit together and I decide this is something I really want to devote all this time into. I'm going to write a book. Like, I could have AI like help me with the outline, right? Or like brainstorm ideas maybe. But if I like put in there like, okay, now write this section, and it spits it out, and I copy that actual text, that's not something I can turn around and sell in a product. Is that what you're saying?
You can technically turn around and sell it, but that doesn't mean that you own it.
You're like, you can do a lot of things, but
yeah, you can do a lot of things. So it's just, you would have a book, but for example, it would more so be along the lines of, you don't own the output. So if someone was to say, get the same output and then write a book that said the exact same thing, you would have no right of recourse because you don't technically own it. You can't say, oh, they copied me. Well, did they copy you? Or is it just AI generated? So that's kind of where.
Yeah. Something I use it a lot for is just like that brainstorming, right? Where I'm like, I want to write like a chapter about this, right? Like, what are things I should maybe include?
Yes.
Or I'm doing a workshop about blah, blah, blah. What do you think, like the, I don't know, the most important things to cover are? And I'll just like kind of like use it to to maybe generate a new idea or to bounce ideas off of, or if I'm feeling really stuck, I have a really hard time naming things. Like I'm always just, and I've had so many conversations with my poor VA being like, it's the business power revenue booster Excel. Yeah. What the fuck is the name of this thing? You know, yeah. And it's horrible. And I'm not good at coming up with kind of clever sounding names. So I like using it for that, just to be like, give me some words that like mean this, or like, what are other words like for this? Or just even having it spit out a bunch of titles, and we don't usually, a lot of them are bad, but like we'll take one and combine them together or change them around a little bit. Yeah. So I use it a lot like that, like to brainstorm or to get my, I don't know, my brain generating its own ideas when it's dark.
It'll be really interesting too, to see, because again, if we go back to where we started, the output is only as good as the input. So if you are giving a custom and you're creating, and that's where it's, I'm just so interested to see how the law transforms and how these worlds collide. Because if the input is something that was created by you and it is custom and it is unique to you, then would the output not be also? So,
but then they can take your property, right? Too. So if I put like my ideas and stuff in there, I could potentially use that for someone else's thing, right? Is that true? I don't know if any of this is, I'm not like,
I don't know.
I have some questions for Chandler on this because this is a topic that I am so like passionate about talking about, because it comes down to like our media literacy when it, you know, what we're hearing from companies is their marketing message. And with the fear mongering of AI, like last year, I'm going to do a case study on this at some point because it is so interesting. But when OpenAI and ChatGPT started gaining like real traction, Google started a PR smear campaign about AI, and all of the people who were doing interviews about how dangerous AI was for humanity on like big podcasts, headline news, you could trace all of them back to working for Google. And they still like, and if you've worked for a tech company, you normally have been giving shares in that company at some point. So there's like, commercially, there's a reason that they might want to slow things down. And it was ultimately so that Google could, in my opinion, allegedly, that Google was doing it. I think Google was doing it so that they could create a sort of 6-month delay so that they could catch up with Bard, because they had so many issues rolling that out. But you're seeing people like with these headlines of that AI is going to destroy the economy and remove all jobs, and you're going to be, you know, like homeless, jobless, and completely replaced by robots within the next 5 years. And obviously, seeing that, it can be, you know, is like really distressing. And people are immediately like, oh no, my sense of safety and security has been like taken away, and now like I mustn't touch this technology. It feels really unnerving. But ultimately, I like Elon Musk started an AI company and then started smearing OpenAI, who he like helped start in the first place as well. Like when you actually trace back all of the people who are fearmongering around AI, there is a argument to be had that they have commercial interest in stopping people from adopting that AI so that they can adopt this much better AI, because look, I'm so ethical, and look, I've just created such a better product. And so with this comes into then Zoom updated their terms of service last year, and it was very vague around the specific language that they used in their terms and conditions. And a lot of people were like, okay, well, now if my calls are going to be used to train your AI language models, I don't want to use Zoom anymore. Their response was a blog post that was like, no, this is what we mean. But they didn't really substantively change their terms and conditions. And the terms and conditions were just vague enough that they actually probably can argue that they can use your calls for certain types of machine learning, just not the specific language model use that they said on their blog post. And so when you look at it and you're like, I know what tech companies are like, and because the law is slow, they will get away with whatever they can get away with until the law changes and forces them to be explicit. And, you know, we see with like Meta and Mark Zuckerberg, he has been sued so many times by people because of data stuff, like the Cambridge Analytica scandal and everything that happened with that. And the fact that the EU got like butted heads with him and said like, well, you know, take your products out of the EU, then we don't care if you're not going to use our data properly. Like tech companies will only do what they are legally forced to do. And if the emerging technologies are meaning that the government and law aren't necessarily keeping pace with it, there's always going to be these gaps where people will do the most that they can without getting sued. And so I'm kind of curious what your thoughts are, Chandler, from the law side of things when it comes to, you know, putting our intellectual property into ChatGPT, because I would just say absolutely don't do it because they can use it. And if you put your book into it to say, here is my book chapter, summarize it into a social media post or something, you have put your intellectual property into an engine and model, and it is as yet unknown how that will play out and whether that is whether you're giving up your right to your own intellectual property when you do that. Anyway, that was just some context for, like, I find the whole thing like really fascinating. I'm not a lawyer, but I have seen so many tech companies really push things beyond the ethical boundaries. And it's something that I don't necessarily like, you know, talking about, because I'm like, oh, you're not a lawyer, so what do you know? And it's like, no, but I am seeing it from the other side, which is before the law has had a chance to get involved.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, if they can take the IP, well, there's two sides to this. If they can take the IP that you are inputting, right, and then utilize it, and you might be better suited to answer this specific question, but from my understanding, the output is sourced, right, from all these different sources on the internet, et cetera. Does that track? Does that sound right?
Yeah, so basically, the way that AI works is ultimately probability. So all of the data parameters that it has analyzed are broken down into tokens. And then the likelihood of a token following another token is calculated. And that's kind of what the algorithm is doing. So it's giving you the most, like, it's like predictive text on steroids, basically. Okay. So it's always going to give you at its core the most likely answer. And so that's the thing that people have talked about the most, really, on the data and training parameters. And that's why it's also not very often factually correct.
That's so interesting. Yeah.
What's interesting is the input, whatever you are inputting, whether it's a prompt or whatever, that is technically your IP. Because when it comes to copyright, the second pen hits paper, the second fingers hit keyboard, you automatically have a copyright in whatever it is you create. So what's interesting is you have a copyright in whatever you input, but exactly where they're sourcing it from, all the different sources, those are also copyrighted materials. Mm-hmm. So they're, you know, sourcing from all these other areas that are copyrighted, whether they have a federally registered copyright or not, is still technically other people's copyright, whether it's from a blog post or whatever it is on the internet, it is some form of copyright. And so from both ends, there's just kind of IP issues because they're taking IP from here and they're taking IP from the other end as well.
Yeah.
And it's that sense of, you know, the argument is like, if it's public domain, but actually we did not consent when we made our information public domain for them to use it in that way. And so a lot of people's, you know, annoyance is, well, if I'd known, I wouldn't have agreed to that. And it's like, yeah, that's an example of like one of the loopholes. So we kind of want to like risk assess what are the potential loopholes that could. So my advice to people is, if somebody else made $5 million from what you're putting into ChatGPT in a year or 2 years time, would you be annoyed about it? If you would be annoyed about it, don't put it into ChatGPT. So I will only ever use ChatGPT for things that are already public domain. So like ActiveCampaign, please explain to me, do a step-by-step process of how to set up a welcome automation in ActiveCampaign. And then it will like give you a starting point, and it's really good for like momentum. But anything to do with your intellectual property, if you're, and I, for me, I do a lot of teaching, so like transcripts and all of that kind of thing. I always go via platform.openai.com, because they very explicitly say when you go via platform.openai.com that the Playground, which is what it's called in there, and the API requests that go through your platform account will never be used to train their language models, and the connection is private. So that's the workaround in terms of using it while still maintaining control of your intellectual property, because if they do go on to use it and your stuff ends up in the public domain, as far as I understand it, you've got more of a case because they've explicitly said to you that they're not going to use it, and it shouldn't ever be part of the of what's out there in the world because it's done through a private connection.
This brings up another interesting point, because whenever we are agreeing or we're signing up for something, we're always agreeing to terms, right? And a lot of people don't read it. So I think number one, important just to read the terms, but not just read them, understand them and do the due diligence to understand what you are agreeing to, what you're signing up for. I mean, we all have, you know, a Samsung or an iPhone or whatever, and every time it updates, you have to like agree to the updated terms, et cetera. Mm-hmm. So number one, that. And then number two, also, for example, if there are different models that are using, for example, I think of Loom now transcribes certain things, or Zoom transcribes mm-hmm. certain things.
All of depending, them, you know, yeah.
Depending on your profession, right? Especially in legal, I know we have certain ethical duties. Not only ethical duties to our clients to keep certain things confidential, so we want to know how these different platforms are using, you know, if we're having a call via Zoom, is that being used? Because that's a confidential communication. But also, number two, if you are bound by an NDA because you yourself have entered into an agreement, but then you are hosting a call on Zoom, or you're hosting something on whatever these different, so you have to be mindful of not only what agreements you personally have entered into, but also what agreements that the terms are that you are signing up for whenever you are using these different softwares and platforms.
Yeah.
I love you for saying that. Like, honestly, just consider me a fangirl, because you would not believe how badly trolled I got on the internet for saying that last August. But this is the thing. Like, I've worked under NDAs, and Samsung, I don't know if you saw this, but Samsung's, one of their senior engineers was working on a top secret new product and put the code into ChatGPT to troubleshoot it. And it ended up out in the public domain because he'd used ChatGPT, and it's like proprietary information. But that happened last year. And it is, you know, if you end up like, if something's in the public domain, who knows who submitted it? But ultimately, if OpenAI gets sued because some confidential information ended up in there, and they track that back to it being submitted through your account, you've signed an NDA, that is something, or even a confidentiality clause, right? It doesn't even necessarily need to be a full NDA. Like most contracts, especially for service provision, have a confidentiality agreement.
Yes.
You have to be so careful. And we have a commercial license for Marketing Magic, and we will not let people use it for their clients' data until we have had their explicit consent that their clients are happy for their data to be used, and that the service providers are being very, very clear about what the privacy parameters and boundaries are. Because otherwise you are not just, you're potentially creating a lawsuit for future you. So it's like really, really, you can't be too careful. And it's not fear mongering. It's just being really sensible about the fact that these bigger companies will also do anything to not have the fallback on them. So if they can scapegoat you and say, well, this, they put it in here, so it's nothing to do with us, they will absolutely do that.
Yes, yeah, I always say, I'm like, I'm an entrepreneur, right? So I feel like I'm a more of a risk taker than a risk avoider, I would say. Right, but right. I do talk about in the mastermind all the time, I also like to be strategically pessimistic.
Yes.
What I mean by that is I'm always looking at the business, and I'm always like, if the worst case happened, what would that be? And how would we survive it? And could we survive it? And I think that's how we make businesses sustainable, is like looking at like, kind of like, if they took my book, like if that's the worst case, right? And someone else published my book, like, you know, I don't think it's like fear mongering. I think it's like necessary in entrepreneurship to evaluate risk. Like, you're not going to have a business without taking any amount of risk. You're always going to be you're always risking like wasting time and wasting money, no matter what you're fucking doing in business. Right. And you have to be strategically evaluating those two things about like, if this doesn't work, you know, can I survive the waste of time and waste of money? Yes. Can I keep the business afloat, or will this potentially sink us? And being strategically pessimistic in those decisions, while at the same time, like, not being too risk avoidant. But I think it like plays out really well here, where it's like, well, maybe don't put your friggin' book in your intellectual property, or if you come up with a new concept, like, protect that. And let's like assume that the worst could happen. Okay. Right. And like, you don't want to risk losing that. That's not, especially not over something like that. It's just not even worth it. Right. So this is really important education, I think, for people to have. And I'm so glad we're having this conversation, because I never really have thought about, I don't pay that much attention to tech stuff, right? So I've never paid that this much attention to this stuff. So I think this is all super important and super interesting, just so entrepreneurs can make an informed decision about what you're putting in there. Like a lot of the stuff I use, I'm like, yeah, you can have it. Like it's my, you know, close cart email or like, so like, it's just stuff that's just kind of like whatever, but it's really good to know that if there is intellectual property, like not to be putting it in there. But then you said there are ones you can use where you, where you're protected, mm-hmm. right? So how do you know the difference? Like, tell me like the, like I'm five.
Okay, so the GPT in ChatGPT is the language model that has been created by OpenAI. So OpenAI okay. is like the company behind it. ChatGPT mm-hmm. is their like product. It's their user-facing mm-hmm. Like way of interacting with GPT, the language model. And the reason it's free is because you are paying with your data ultimately, and you can interact with it because they will use the conversations that you're having to improve the future versions of the GPT model. But you can access GPT by going through platform.openai.com, which is the developer platform. And that's where it's the interface is a bit like more complicated, but you can create an API key. With Marketing Magic, we use that, but we also give users the option to add their own API key so that all of their transmissions are done via their own API key. They're like totally comfortable with the fact that it's like secure on their side of things, especially if you're working with clients, it's good to have that. But you can still access, if like you've got GPT here, the two ways of accessing it are ChatGPT, which is the easy to use chat interface and you pay with your data, or going via the platform developer side, so platform.openai.com. And for that, you will set up an account and it'll load it with $5 of credits, and then it will cost you tokens. But the tokens are like 0.0002 cents per 400 words. So to give you a like context, the average online business owner would be spending 38 cents a month on tokens through their Marketing Magic account, where they're creating blog posts, social media posts, sales pages, like they're repurposing transcripts. They're doing the most. They've got a whole lot going on. But they're instead of it being like tracked, you're paying tokens and it's like 38 cents. My question is, even if it was $3, would you rather risk your intellectual property or pay $3 to have your like private AI connection and just feel super reassured that you're not going to end mm-hmm. up in a situation where your book gets published by someone else? And ultimately for me, that is like a really easy yes. I would much rather do that and have that peace of mind. So that's the sort of approach that I would recommend taking if you're doing anything that isn't already in the public domain.
You know what's interesting, and I don't have the answer to this. This is just a question that popped in my head. If, for example, you were to write a book and you were to federally copyright that book, okay, now it is your federal IP, and then you were to put it into AI, not that you would, because then at that point you wouldn't necessarily have a reason to, but if
but maybe like you were saying, like happen, to make a social media post,
yes,
or to
yes.
summarize a chapter or make a study guide or something.
Yes.
Right?
Maybe
you just drop the transcript in there or something.
So if you put it in there, then what happens? Do they now, are you consenting to the use of it, even though it is federally registered? Because a lot of the what people input isn't a federal copyright, right? It's an or a federal chart or whatever it is. It's your federal IP. But if you have a federally registered copyright, again, I don't know the answer, but I'm now curious, if you were to input,
I think a lot
that,
of this is like unknown, right? Like,
yeah.
like you're saying, like we're gonna see it playing out probably.
I wonder if they've got that in their terms and conditions now, because it's like with Zoom, you're granting them the like royalty-free license and perpetuity to use everything, and so it's like okay, but why do you need that? You know,
right.
beyond my commercial interaction with you as a company, it feels like that is unnecessary. So anytime somebody is wanting your royalty-free license in perpetuity beyond that, I'm like, let's just take a step back and have a think about it. And I know it's like quite standard in a lot of things, but especially where companies are doing innovative things, like this is the thing that annoys me about innovation is that nobody takes responsibility for the impact of that innovation. And yeah. so then it's like, are you actually being innovative if you're just creating worse things that are actually ultimately causing harm? Is it innovation if you're not taking responsibility for the impact? But we are in a situation where that is how it's defined. And so yeah. if we think about the potential impact of some of these companies yeah. where they are innovating, but we don't have clear parameters for what that looks like, we haven't been given the option to consent. Is it something that we want to say yes to right away? And we know what the risks are as business owners, but there is a lot of, you know, the idea of putting something public on Facebook is one, you know, argument that people have where it's like, well, you're already on the internet, so you may as well just lean in. And it's like, but if I put something on a social yeah. platform, my understanding is that that is in the public space, is something for the public space. If I'm having a confidential conversation with somebody on Zoom about their business or about coaching or therapy or whatever people are using Zoom for,
everything has, I mean, really personal things even
yeah, exactly, you have not consented for that to be in the public domain. So the concern that that is part of an AI learning model situation, and those data pieces are going to be labeled by somebody in a you know, like people who are paid like slave labor wages to yeah. label data sets as well. It's like, that's a whole other conversation.
No, I'm like, oh my gosh, we have to move off of Zoom. Is there yeah. is there a problem yeah. so, recommend, or are they all doing it though? Like, is there so any good, where are the good use, guys? Tell me the good guys.
I use Butter because they're based in the EU. So if you have any data okay. privacy concerns, choosing a company based out of the EU yeah. is a good shout yeah. because they have to be much, much more yes. careful with your personal
That's
data.
That's so interesting. So. I had no idea. I mean, I saw like the little Zoom kind of kerfuffle going around, I think, last year, but I wasn't, like I'm saying, I'm not like a techie person, and a lot of it just seems kind of confusing and overwhelming mm. to me, right? I think a lot of this too is like the tech companies do get away with stuff because a lot of us are like, I don't know, like what, I have no idea what's happening. Like, mm. and then I just want to clarify, if they use marketing magic, then is that protected? Like, you guys have that like locked down where it's not
yeah, it's used. It goes through platform.openai.com. Okay. So you are using a private API key, and we actually don't hold, we hold like the minimum amount of data about your company, and we don't like, we don't hold your finished sales pages or anything like that. We encourage you to integrate with either your own Google Drive or your own Notion account so that yeah. you can send your results over and keep it where all of your other intellectual property is in your, if you're using cloud-based stuff. And then we have, you know, copy and paste options for people who aren't using that. But it just means that you are always know where the information is about your business, and it's really easy to delete your account and just be forgotten. You know, it's not somebody was talking about something today where there's an estate agent in the UK, and if you even ask about a property, they have it in their terms and conditions that they will legally keep all of your data for 7 years, and you can't request for it to be deleted. And I'm like, no, that's definitely break some laws. But just the sense of like, and Google calls it like the right to be forgotten, like we should be able to very easily delete yeah. Like evidence of our existence if we want to, because it's our information. So that's the kind of reasoning behind why we've kept it very light in terms of what the app actually holds. It's bare minimum, it's really easy to delete, and then anything you create, you send it over to your cloud-based storage area. And our permissions there are only to see and add content to the exact folder that we create, so that we can continue to add stuff in. A lot of companies will ask you for the most permissions, which allow them to read and extract information as well. So even things like connecting your Google account to, or logging in with your Google account to a piece of software. Once you've done that, you can quite often be giving permissions away without realizing. And Google does communicate on the confirmation page when you say that you want to connect at all what data can be seen, but it's always worth double checking that, because you really don't want to be
just gosh, I always do that. I'm always just like, yeah, whatever. Like,
yeah.
So I was thinking about that too, Chandler, when you were like, you should read all the terms and conditions. I'm like, I never read that stuff.
Well, so then the question is begged for yeah. if the book situation happened, right? Yeah. But then pursuant to the terms, you are agreeing that any input they can utilize But the law tends to look at things through a reasonably prudent person standard. Mm-hmm. Does the reasonably prudent person, number one, understand all legal lingo? No. Mm-hmm. Number two, does the reasonably prudent person read every single term and condition for every single software? Correct. So I'm wondering if it were to go to court and it's a federal copyright versus terms that you maybe have been updated since you agreed to them. And granted, continuing to use a platform, you are in essence acquiescing or consenting to the updated terms. But if you miss the email or the email went to your junk file, I don't know. There's a lot of gray area.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, it sounds like I think it's always good to be like pessimistic. And if you guys want to use AI for marketing, I would definitely just go get marketing magic. Seriously though, I mean, you've come highly, I don't just say that, like you come very highly recommended from a bunch of people I know that I respect a lot, that have said really good things about you. So I have no qualms being like, yeah, you should, I'm going to go buy it now and stop using ChatGPT. I don't want to have to worry about this stuff. I'm like, let's just keep it behind the little wall.
What was the process like of building an AI platform? That's a loaded question, I know.
So I haven't had like a social life for about 18 months, like at all. And there's another tool that was like very well known before I built mine. And I know it took like 80 guys, 18 months to build it. And it isn't as good as marketing magic. And I've had people who got like really...
Like, you just need one woman to...
Honestly, I'm just like, I love it when women, right? They need 80 guys, we don't need 80 men. We just can like crack on. I will say it has like pushed me to my limit, and I have been literally unable to speak to my husband for like days sometimes because I've been like really deep into something. I have really enjoyed building something that is so like useful for people, and for me, I'm really interested in all of this. Like, I've been working on the internet since 2005. I was 15 when I started working as an SEO freelancer, and I you know, have like built websites and platforms and done like so much tech stuff. So it really I woke up one day when people were like using marketing magic and they were saying like, oh, I, you know, this is just like so helpful. And I said to my husband, like, I feel like this is what I was made for. Like, I feel like my skill set and like my career has like culminated in this point of like, this is just a really, like, it's really cool to be able to build something that is solving people's overwhelm and helping people to do, like, my business has always worked more with like creatives and creators, and I love doing the work that I do because the groups of people I'm working with genuinely want to make the world a more beautiful place. And so if the something that I've built allows that to happen, like, that for me is just super exciting. And it is a really it's a really male dominated space. And I think like my career always has been with like SEO in general, like web and tech, it has always been, it's like, at the risk of getting trolled for this, if any guys are watching, but like the Reddit guy who lives in his basement is like the classic demographic of like people who work in the space.
You understand marketing too, though. Yeah. When I did your program and I was like, you were asking questions that are like questions I would ask if I were coaching somebody trying to help them with their marketing. And like, there's a lot of people that can code all kinds of shit. That doesn't mean they understand relationship-based marketing. That doesn't mean they understand like niche and like positioning and like sales and like, you know. So I think you have like a really unique skill set because it's obvious you have a deep understanding of both things.
My special interest, like, so I found out that I have ADHD and I'm autistic when I was like 29. And so that was like a whole process. But it was really funny because I was homeschooled and I did not ever have as like, you know, when you think like, if so, how would you describe yourself? You know, what are the qualities that you would say about yourself? Like, I would never, ever, ever qualify myself as say like, oh, I'm intelligent or I'm smart or like, it's never, it's just not a factor that I care about. I care about so many other things. So it was really, really, it genuinely gave me a bit of an existential crisis. And I've talked to my therapist a lot about it last year, that people who were like my peers or I looked up to were using the marketing tool. And they are like, you know, people who've been the CMO of global companies. And they were like, Manexia, how have you created this? Like, this is ridiculous. And I was like, oh, like, it's just a silly, goofy thing that I did in my pajamas while I was feeling unwell. Like, you know, it just me, like my perspective of it is like, so I've kind of had to be like, oh, okay, this is just not like, because I'm like, oh, if I can do it, anyone can do it. And actually sometimes like, maybe that's, am I just willing to be more uncomfortable? Or so there's been like a little bit of that. That's kind of how it was. It's been messy and I'm still working through it personally, but professionally it's been very rewarding.
I'm
and I
so
love
excited
it.
Excited for you. I just think you're continuing in such a good way and what you're offering is so awesome. I want to make sure we wrap on time so I don't keep you guys too long, but just for anybody, I see there's like more people live on here now too, but for anybody that just tuned in, just tell everybody who you are, where they can find you, where can we stalk you guys online? Where can we follow you? You're both obviously like so knowledgeable. I really appreciate you taking the time to come and like share all this information with us. This has been such an interesting conversation. I just really, really appreciate it. So yeah, tell us where we can go stalk you on the internet.
Thank you for having us. My name is Chandler, founder of Leap Illegal, a virtual intellectual property law firm. You can find me at Lawyer Chandler J on Instagram.
Okay. Awesome.
And my name is Manexia and I am the creator of Marketing Magic. And you can find me at marketingmagic.app or just at Manexia. There's not very many of me. So if you search for Manexia, I'd be.
I'm going to subscribe to your thing after this. I did a trial and I think it ran out and I like never signed up. And now I'm like, what was I doing? I got to go.
It's gotten so much better since you had the trial because I literally can't help myself and I keep building new things.
I'm like, oh, I'm not a tech person, but I really do love like nerding out with new little programs. Like I'm always doing new little calendar app stuff. And I love like productivity. I've been like changing my productivity tool all the time. My poor team is like, can you stop? But I love messing with new programs and software. So I'm excited to look at it. We'll have to talk more because I think you're doing is really, really cool. And I've heard nothing but really good things about you, which I think is kind of rare in this space, to be honest. But every person I talk to about you, like just raves about you. So you're very, really very highly respected.
And super grateful for you inviting Chandler as well, because I would love to have you come as a guest expert for the Marketing Magic community.
I know. I'm like,
we for sure have to connect. So Faith, thank you so much. Because
you're part of the Power Hour because I feel like it connects all of us together, because I feel like I wanted to start doing the panel show because I feel like we all are like, I've seen you forever and like both of you forever, and like it's just nice to like get to talk to people face to face instead of just being like, oh, we're like orbit around the internet in the same internet sphere. But I've never had a conversation with you, so I've really been loving doing the panel and like talking to you guys, and like just gosh, I'm so dazzled by both of you. You're both so freaking smart and doing such cool things. And I just really appreciate you taking the time. You guys go stalk them, get their free stuff. There was a free trial, right, of Marketing Magic they can get, and the free legal guide, which sounded amazing. Yep. You said it has like contract stuff in it and business stuff in it. There's so you guys go grab their stuff. If you're watching this on the blog or on YouTube or on the podcast, we'll have all the links for you. If you guys can't find the links, just go to faithmariah.com. Everything from Power Hour is on the blog. So each episode has its own blog and we have all the links updated and all that stuff there. So that's it. Thank you guys so much for being here. We're starting the business reboot tomorrow. So if you guys are watching live, go sign up. Today's the last day to get on Teams. It's going to be fun. I've got a bunch of stuff up my sleeve for that. So I hope you guys are all coming that are watching this. And that's it. I'll talk to you guys soon. Bye, everybody.
Bye. See you.